Welcome to the Small Nonprofit Podcast with down-to-earth practical advice on how to get things done in your small organization. You are going to change the world and we can help. Hello and welcome back to the podcast. I'm your host, Cindy Wagman, and I'm joined by my co-host, Anya McGlynn.
Hello, everybody.
So first of all, Happy New Year. This is our first episode of 2021.
Amazing. Yes. We are recording this in 2020. So don't spoil it if everything is fine in 2021.
Unless it's like a Y2K moment when everything ends on December 31st at midnight.
I know. It's been a year of unknowns and I'm sure listening from 2021, it'll still feel like there's a few unknowns. I saw somebody tweeting that they would like to see a preview of 2021 before committing.
I'm all for that. Yeah. I think 2020 was a hard year. And what we know is that 2021 is going to continue to be a hard year. We're not getting out of this pandemic until at least halfway through the year, if not longer. And there's just a fatigue all around us. I mean, it's going to be a hard year.
It's going to be a hard year, but there is something promising and fresh and new about January. Something about that calendar that maybe looks a little bit more manageable than December's did. So, you know, in spite of the fact that we still have a challenge ahead of us, January always fills me with a little bit of optimism.
Exactly.
And very uncharacteristic for me, nonetheless.
I know, you optimistic? That's my job. But I do think that this conversation today with Bruce McDonald from Imagine Canada really actually does set us up with a sense of optimism or focus on those silver linings with the sector, understanding that we've been tried and tested in a way that I don't think anyone else, like we've never had collectively this past year. But out of that, there are opportunities, there are silver linings, and there are learnings. And that's what we have to start looking at and grasping onto if we want to not just survive, but come out with an understanding that there are things that can and should change. And now is the time. Like if we don't change it now, we're not going to be resilient as a sector or as organizations to manage challenges in the future.
No, that's right. I think there's a lot of lessons around resiliency that are, that have been applied by organizations who already sort of had them floating around or have been learned by organizations who didn't, and hopefully are going to be relevant long beyond this pandemic. I'm sure that there are ways of working or approaches to engagement that you have found yourself sort of forced into as a result of the pandemic that are probably going to endure. We'd love to hear from you if you've had that experience. You tried something new and you're like, actually, going to keep this around.
Yeah. Exactly.
Sometimes, you know, creativity and trying new approaches, it requires a bit of an extra challenge or barrier or limitation to force you out of the way that you've traditionally done things.
Yeah. I mean, there's two things that we see a lot. There's this term creative destruction in the entrepreneur space, which is some of the most creative leaps forward happen when the old is destructed. But then there's also, I believe, you know, what with constraints comes innovation, right? That's sometimes innovation is not like what in the world could happen, but what could happen when we place these constraints on ourselves or on organizations. And certainly this is a year for that. So it's such a pleasure to introduce Bruce to the podcast. Before we get into the conversation, I feel like we should have sort of a collective deep breath. This is a big year and let it all out. Starting fresh, even though we know that it really is just a flipping the page of our calendars, let's approach 2021 with a renewed sense of energy and optimism so that we can get get through it together. So Bruce McDonald is the president and CEO of Imagine Canada. When carnivals and social good combined, it pointed to a path. And for 30 years, Bruce has been walking that route. From working for organizations that provide services to young people, older adults, persons with disabilities, community service clubs, and sports and recreation groups, Bruce's experience has led to him to Imagine Canada, where he is president and CEO. Prior to that, he was the CEO of Big Brothers, Big Sisters of Canada, where he participated in a collective effort to bring mentoring programs to kids. Bruce holds a bachelor's degree in sports administration from Laurentian University, a master's in management in the voluntary sector from McGill University, and a record in the Guinness Book of World Records. In early 2019, Bruce was appointed co-chair of the Permanent Advisory Committee on the Charitable Sector, working with the federal government. I'm so pleased to introduce you all to Bruce and enjoy the conversation. Bruce, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thanks very much. I'm really delighted to be here.
I'm so excited to have you on. I feel like this has been a long time coming. I'd say you and Imagine Canada are huge champions for the charitable sector in Canada. I like to think that we are as well. And so today we're going to be talking about the sector at large and, you know, as we are in the new year, what we can look forward to or what we should prepare for this coming year. So I want to start just by asking you a little bit about what's getting you either excited or have you wringing your hands? You know, what are the hot issues for you right now?
Well, I think there's a bit of both. I mean, as we look at what 2020 has been like and the ripple effects of this pandemic, interestingly enough, I do think that there are some silver linings in the clouds, as well as future storm clouds on the horizon. So maybe we'll start with the storm clouds and end with the silver linings.
Perfect.
Right off the bat, the kinds of things that we see are that our sector is inextricably linked to the health and well-being of the Canadian economy. Mm-hmm. And the longer that the economy is disrupted, the more challenging it will be for charities to be able to ensure that they can continue to provide the services that Canadians have come to expect. You know, we have some new data out that's suggesting that fewer Canadians are going to give this holiday season, and those who are projecting that their giving will be down. Mm-hmm. And when 40% of all individual donations come in during the holiday season, that could be a bit of a storm cloud for organizations starting next year.
Absolutely.
I think, again, too, as long as our society is not in a place where Canadians can gather, the continued challenge, and I think this really does affect small organizations, of not being able to do the kinds of traditional event-based fundraising that they've done in the past, will be problematic, as they're saying, how long can we can continue to function? Mm-hmm. Now, that being said, I do think that there are a couple of upsides that we're seeing. First and foremost, it appears that more and more Canadians are having intentional, thoughtful engagement with our sector, albeit for all the wrong reasons. But whether it is because of the closures of charity and nonprofit daycare providers, and as they seek to return to their place of work, where are their kids going to go? Or they've had mental health distress during the pandemic, or we've seen a rise in domestic abuse cases, and it's charities and nonprofits where people go for services. There's been this deeper connection with the sector than we've seen. Hopefully, there will be a lasting impact with that.
Yeah.
The other thing that we've seen, and that I'll kind of wrap up the opening here, is that funders of different stripes, primarily foundations, corporations, and government, have been loosening restrictions around how organizations can use the dollar. So rather than saying you must use it for this particular program, they've said use it for the mission or cause. We're hopeful that what we think has been a challenging funding climate where those dollars are always restricted and targeted, it might open up again in the longer term, which would be beneficial to organizations.
You bet. hugely beneficial. I mean, I just want to touch on the sort of implicit irony of what you started with, which is when we need our sector the most is when our sector is most at risk.
Absolutely.
And that interesting sort of deepening reliance and by as a consequence, deepening hopefully connection to the work might have long-term benefits. But for the short term, as you said, it's really difficult. And I too am hopeful around the funding structure, especially of foundations. But one of the things that I think has the most upside in the long term is sort of what I call broad-based individual giving, right? It's the mass of people who come together to support organizations. And as you said, that's at risk right now. How do we reverse that trend? I mean, we are seeing people give, even people who are, you know, we always like to talk about capacity, but people typically give regardless or aligned to their capacity, but it never, in my experience, hasn't stopped people from giving. So there's a lot else going on, but how do we take 2021 as an opportunity to say, okay, we need to shift this as we recover, as the economy recovers? What can we do to ensure that hopefully those big institutional funders are shifting the way that they give, but also our everyday donors?
Yeah, well, you make a great point. And it's interesting, with some polling that was released in mid-December showed that one of the reasons that Canadians were saying they might not give or they might not give as generously was that 71% of them were citing financial difficulties as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. Yeah. This is broader based than we've seen in the past, even far more extensive than the 2008-2009 sort of Great Recession or economic collapse. That being said, though, again, there's always these moments of opportunity within these challenging times. We are seeing a rise in online giving. Mm-hmm. And so if people aren't going or can't go to their favorite special event, be it a gala, a 10K run, a bake sale, or a toy drive, where they might be inclined to do some impulse giving, people are engaging online. I think that is an opportunity for relationship building for organizations, and opportunity for a cost-effective way to build relationships with prospective donors and try and convert those who migrated online into long-term supporters of organizations.
Mm-hmm. And here comes the sort of catch 22, which is, for so long, technology, infrastructure, all those things have been funding no-nos. And so organizations, especially small ones, have, haven't had the infrastructure to be able to effectively build up their online capabilities, and even in a semi-sophisticated way, things like automation. So how do we, I don't want to use the term pivot, but it comes to mind, but how do we mobilize as with limited resources to be able to understand the importance of technology? I think we all know how important it is working from home, but to invest in how we work as a sector, not just what we work on.
Yeah, I again, this is a really insightful point, and I'm hoping kind of an inflection point for us. So to me, the door has been opened just a crack on this issue, and it's time for us to drive a Mack truck through that crack. Because
love it. I'm taking the steering wheel.
Yay. Because it's so interesting in a sense that at a time when the sector is required to adapt and innovate at both a scale and speed, the likes of which we've never seen before, the very core competencies that we need to do that, they don't exist, or they're challenged. Because I hate to say it, but the ideas of digital architectures or infrastructures, and even the talent and the people with the knowledge to be able to do that, falls into the dreaded, you know, cost of administration bucket. And those are the kinds of things that funders have been reticent on. So the crack that I think has been opened is it's time to shift the conversation to organizational health and well-being, mm-hmm. as opposed to overhead and administration. And I've been using this sort of tree analogy. I think people understand that we need to feed the roots and have a strong, you know, core to a tree, or the branches break off in a storm. This is a storm. Organizations will topple if the trunk and the roots are not strong. And part of that strength is investing in the kinds of things like digital infrastructure and digital technology that are going to allow us to succeed in the future.
Yeah, I love that analogy. We also often talk about fundraising. You know, when is the best time to plant a tree? Just 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Next best time is right now. And I think that's actually a beautiful tie into that analogy. But to do that, or to have people step up to fund in that way, requires a lot of trust, right? I think part of the reason over the last number of years we've shifted towards the model of I want to fund that person or that program is because there has been an erosion of trust in the sector. How do we start to rebuild that so that people really understand that we need those roots, we need those trunks to be able to do long-term impactful work?
Yeah, I think there's two points in there. So one is, I think there is, again, this crack that has been open. And I think the opportunity that lies before us is that many organizations don't have, in particular, digital specialists on staff, or even the board directors that can play this role with any meaningful capacity. At the same time, corporate Canada is saying, how do we engage with the sector in a meaningful way when many of our budgets are being cut? Mm-hmm. Talent in this area may be the gateway or the pathway to changing the way funding happens. If we are able to engage those digital specialists that reside within companies as participants in helping be our guides on how to do this, they're going to identify and recognize the needs, and they become those advocates or those champions, even within their companies, to say, you can fund all the programs that you want, but that organization is not going to be around if we don't help it with its organizational health and well-being. The second part is, even though 2020 has been a challenging year in many ways, it's our sense that the foundation of trust is still pretty strong in this country. And that charities have had the ability to work authentically with citizens, and they evidence and witness every day the great work. And I think even more so, we've got families who never thought they would be standing in line at food banks who are now doing so. And I think the more that they have positive experiences where they and their loved ones or their work colleagues or their families and friends have benefited, again, these are pathways that we can hopefully invite connection points and then build off of it.
Mm-hmm. That reminds me of a lot of what we're talking about and hearing from other experts in the sector right at the beginning of COVID, which is continue to serve, continue to build community, right? This is what we as a sector are born to do, if you will. And it's hard under the constraints of COVID in a lot of ways, but that's the only way I think we're going to come out of this. As you said, right at the beginning, right, that there's a deepening appreciation for our work because more and more people have had to access it.
Yeah. You know what? It's interesting because I think there's deepening connection. I think it's up to us now to ensure that that becomes appreciation. And so there's,
how do we do that?
Exactly. And I think, you know, in a world of today that we can't bring people together in the same way, or you might have invited someone to come and visit a facility or do a tour, I think this is where we need to get creative as organizations and think about how are those digital or virtual experiences matched with emergent in-person ones when it's safe. But there is an opportunity, because there's likely those who have never experienced services now coming to our sector. So if we're well-organized and smart, we should be able to convert some of those into long-term supporters.
Absolutely. I love that sense of opportunity. And I also think that it's an opportunity to really look at community-based fundraising in a way that I think our sector has shied away from, specifically our sector who provides frontline service, you know, who is working with populations that require that kind of support. And there's always been a reluctance to this sense of, you know, the government should be funding our work and let's rely on the government and these grants because we can't ask our community to give. They need us. How can they support us and need us at the same time? Have you come across that kind of thought? And what would you say to that?
Well, I'm a believer in the idea of a mixed ecology in our society. I think that we need a variety of, in a sense, constructs. We need charities, we need nonprofits, we need social enterprises, social entrepreneurs, social purpose businesses to be able to provide the services. We also need a mixed ecology in terms of how those organizations are supported. Yes, absolutely, there is a role for government in the provision of support to ensure that these services are there. But I think it's also important that communities and people directly engage. They can do that through a variety of ways. That corporate Canada is there because the employees of tomorrow are saying, we want companies who have ethical supply chains, are mindful of their environmental footprint, and are also deeply connected to their communities as places where we want to work. And I think we have seen and are continuing to see foundations who are stepping up and saying, we're going to do more with the dollars that are invested in our organizations. I'm not a believer that there's a silver bullet here. I really believe it is a coming together of a variety of players in the system that will ultimately positively affect that system and allow organizations to thrive.
Mm-hmm. So there's that coming together of our communities, whether that's our corporate communities, government, and individuals. What can we, like, I know that you're interested in also the collective of the sector and how we can actually work together to support each other and move forward, advocate is sort of a mixed word, but we've talked about advocacy and more we're seeing organizations engage in advocacy, especially as a collective. So what are the opportunities for us during this time to actually look how we work with other organizations more?
I think there's all kinds of opportunities. Unfortunately, there may be some that are driven by financial survival or financial instability. But I think there's many others that can be driven by increased opportunity. Mm-hmm. And so there's opportunities for shared service models for organizations with like-minded causes or like-minded leadership to come together and say, none of us can afford a digital specialist on our own, but maybe we could come together and cooperate in a manner that we share talent and knowledge amongst us to be able to do better. There may be times when it's appropriate for organizations to actually come together as entities. Although in my experience in the sector, that's one of the most challenging things to do because at some point, usually one board needs to vote itself out of existence. And for people who have put their heart and soul into organizations, those are very, very difficult moments to do. So I think there's a variety of ways that we can think about doing this. The hardest part is to think about this in a way that we can overcome the barriers around brand, around sometimes ego, around logos, and say, what is in fact best for our communities? And how might we, unfortunately, have uncomfortable conversations to be able to find new ways of working that will ultimately have that strong roots, have that strong trunk, and be able to withstand future challenges that might come along.
Mm-hmm. So with that in mind, what role do you think the small charity has in our sector specifically? Because I think the obvious sort of where your thoughts go to that is, you know, small organizations merging, which I don't think you're implying, but I think that just listening to that, most people naturally make that assumption. So how do we think about the role of the smaller organizations in the sort of larger context of the sector?
Well, in many ways, smaller organizations are the actual face of the sector to everyday Canadians. They're the vast majority. If you just look at raw numbers in the Canadian charitable landscape. And so there are many of the places where people are both volunteering their time as the deliverers of service and investing their money as donors to those causes. So I don't see a dark future for small charities. I see a bright future. But that bright future may require organizations to think differently than they did in the past. You know, interestingly, like one of the observations I've had is that it's been the mid-sized charities who've been the most affected by the pandemic because they've usually had core operating costs around staff or equipment or technology or people that have been harder to move quickly. Organizations that were very small that only had volunteers, they've had a slightly easier time in terms of suspending their operation because they might not have big buildings or offices that they're carrying core costs. But of course, many of those were volunteer-driven organizations where it was more challenging if they needed PPE or to deliver those services. But I think regardless of the organizational size, it's incumbent upon leaders to look around their communities and say, what's the future of the services that we're providing? Does it mean that we should find new service models? Does it mean that we should find new fundraising models? Can we share a database instead of all of us having separate ones that maybe don't work all that well because they're invented in-house? We can firewall the information to protect privacy, but it just might mean that we have to ask ourselves a different set of questions because the operating environment is fundamentally shifting.
Yes. I mean, I'm sitting here nodding because that's so much of what we see with organizations.
And Cindy, I wonder if there's another thought I might be able to offer. I'm going to be very interested to see if one of the ripple effects of this pandemic is a change in the direction of urbanization. I'm actually hearing from organizations and sometimes companies who are saying it's no longer vital that the individuals employed by our company or our organization reside in a big center. And I'm witnessing people who are moving to smaller centers for a quality of life, affordability, sort of lifestyle desire, but are still working for those organizations. If that's the case, that may in fact strengthen small communities and rural communities in a way we haven't seen before. Now, this is total conjecture. But it's just something that I'm wondering if that happens, if that might also benefit smaller charities in those markets.
Absolutely. I mean, a third of our team has moved out of the city. It's a small team, but still, you know, we've been sort of freed from the sense of space, right? But of course, that's so reliant on our ability to adopt technology and learn how to work with it and collaborate in a different way. Yes. You know, as you talked about, both in terms of like how we work together across organizations, but even within internally to organizations, it's one of the biggest struggles I think some organizations have seen is not just adopting technology, but, you know, figuring out how to still create an internal organizational community and a sense of belonging among their staff. Just maybe on a personal note with your team, have you what tips or advice would you have for organizations listening? You know, I think we can see the light at the end of the tunnel now in January 2021, but we still have a ways to go. And as you said, this sort of remote work is probably not ending. So what can we do as organizations to foster that culture internally? You know, so much of, you know, we're known for working really hard, I think, in our sector. You know, we're known for wearing our hearts on our sleeves and just putting everything into our work because we're so passionate. But of course, that leads to burnout. And that is going to, and I think, you know, that's at an all-time high right now. So what can we do to start to rebuild a sense of normalcy or balance even in our organizations so that we can actually get through to that light at the end of the tunnel?
Well, you know, I think you're, first of all, I think your instincts are bang on around the way the sector works, and that data I mentioned that came out in mid-December, one of the findings that we saw was that just over half of those in the sector who responded to our survey instrument indicated that their ability to manage work-life balance for those working in the sector has decreased since the start of the pandemic. There is a sense that we're a sector running a marathon at a sprinter or middle distance pace, and that's simply not sustainable in the long haul. I can't speak to other organizations, but what I might do is just sort of present to you how Imagine Canada itself is thinking about it. So we have staff in Toronto primarily and Montreal right now, and we've made the declaration with our staff that we're going digital by design, that the way we're going to think about work is not going to return to pre-COVID levels. It will be different, in part because we're not sure that even once a vaccine arrives and is widely distributed, that this way of working around society is going to be pre-COVID again. And so we're building a business model that will allow us to withstand future storms. So I think part of the very process is having a philosophy and an intentionality around how this is going to work. And I don't know if ours is going to be a success yet or not. It's too early to tell. But that means that we're now creating, and we've just done this, a policy around what is the relationship between Imagine Canada as the company and individuals who are now working at home. What does that mean for chairs and increased bandwidth and desks and things like that? These are policies that maybe many have. We haven't had in a rigorous way because it was more occasional. This is going to be more of a sense of permanence for us. Yeah. So that means we need to step up in an intentional way and think about the impact to people's lives and how we're going to respond as an employer. It also is going to mean different things around our usual staff retreats and how we do those in maybe a virtual world until travel is not just acceptable, but that our staff are comfortable coming together in groups again. So to me, the starting place is to really think about what is your future business model and how do you start to identify those elements that look different from the previous one and start to address them one by one.
I actually love that as a tie-in to going back to the tree analogy, right? Because you talked about what is it going to take for us to withstand the future storms? And that is having strong roots and a solid foundation. Understanding that this is one, we don't know what's coming down the pipeline, but now is a good wake-up call that if you don't change, if you don't invest in these things, you're going to be right back at square one, the next crisis that our society has. So I think that's really a nice circular thought. So we understand, digital first, flexibility in terms of work environment, fundraising, diversity in terms of who your funders are. These are all strong roots, solid foundations. Is there anything we haven't talked about that you want to add in terms of things that we should be investing in or building out now that will help us be stronger?
One of the things I believe is that that we need to be continually innovative or inventive, whatever term you want to use, around how we communicate with society at large. So in this time, there has just been a bombardment of messages. Some of the usual channels haven't been as available to us or are very crowded. And I think as we move into the future, thinking about how we both share our stories in compelling ways, if again, we can't bring those people together and put a few hundred people in a room and have that storytelling experience in a way that we've done in the past. How are we going to do this as effectively in a digital or virtual world? I think we need to continue to invest in the impact side of our work. So it's great to have heartwarming stories. We also need data to be able to show that our programs are effective and our continued good investments. So while I don't necessarily think that the importance of those has changed, I think the way we may go about it whether it's micro storytelling through quick videos or whether it's embracing new technologies also to bring along the next generation of donors and participants in our causes, will be critically important as we think about this entire shift that the sector is going through.
Mm-hmm. Before we wrap up, because we're running out of time, I want to make sure there's nothing else you want to add or final thoughts you want to leave our listeners with.
Well, just that I'm someone who I've worked in this sector a long time, and I'm a hopeful person as it relates to the work that we do. And while I do think that for many organizations, they're facing real challenges, I mean, just simply by flipping the calendar doesn't make the challenges go away.
Wouldn't that be nice though?
But I've also seen, and one of the things I've really experienced is organizations coming together in a way that says, we need to work effectively as collectives to leverage the strengths of our sector. I mean, you touched on advocacy. You know, while some don't necessarily feel comfortable doing advocacy, we can all be advocates in our own ways. And that can be through sharing stories. That can be sometimes talking to your member of parliament. Sometimes it can be just filling out a survey so that we have the data necessary to be able to advocate on your behalf. And so what I'm hopeful is that some of the practices that we've seen emerge through a crisis can shift our DNA and become part of how we as a sector work together more effectively going forward. With 2.4 million Canadians working in this sector, over 13 million volunteers, and 8.5% of GDP, we are a force to be reckoned with in Canada and should be reckoned with. And if there's one thing we can do coming out of this is to leverage our ability to use that strength for good. And so I'm hopeful as we head into 2021 that some of those emergent lessons can become long-term good habits.
I love that. Bruce, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. For our listeners, where can they learn more about you and Imagine Canada?
Well, they don't want to learn anything more about me, but Imagine Canada, just go to imaginecanada.ca. We have all kinds of sort of free newsletters, whether you have a public policy interest or just, you know, kind of a regular information about the sector. We'd love to engage with your listeners and really find champions out there who are doing great work in their community. So thanks so much for the opportunity to be part of this.
Thank you again. And thanks, of course, to all of our listeners for tuning in. Wishing you a great recovery this year from all the hardships of 2020. As I said, I don't think we're over it. As you said, Bruce, it's not like you flip the calendar and it's done. But hopefully everyone can start to look forward to that light at the end of the tunnel and take the action now to be resilient as organizations. So Bruce, thank you so much for the conversation. Well, folks, that's it for today's episode of The Small Nonprofit. I'm your host, Cindy Wagman, and this show is brought to you by The Good Partnership. As a reminder, if you want more resources around raising more money for your small nonprofit, visit thegoodpartnership.com and download our free fundraising strategy guide. I'll see you next week.